Tene ke tome to be shira dinge gyule kewal lama la thi ngal ya. Ane jingi lab so sin ya chik. Te so dip shi vay dhiri.
Then one turns one's mind towards one's lama and the three jewels and makes requesting prayers to do the seven practice, such as offering, making offerings and the like, and making the commitment from one side that seeing one's teacher and the three jewels as an inspiration and as an example to emulate, one asks for their blessings that we may emulate them, that we may be successful in training according to the teachings and their instructions, and thereby be able to emulate them. So the next step there is to make supplications or requesting prayers to our teachers and the three jewels. These requesting prayers are there so that so as to assist that our meditation is successful and it's successful quickly. This can be likened to, for example, when we are sitting before a holy being such as His Holiness. And so His Holiness has obviously innumerable attainments in his mind. And then this can be reflected or seen in the behavior of the students. So the students who are receiving the teachings are sitting there in a peaceful manner, in a subdued manner, in a concentrated manner. And this is because those qualities are within the teacher themselves. And thereby, from being in the presence of the teacher, they receive these blessings and emulate those qualities that the teacher have. And we find that when His Holiness's teachings have come to an end, that we ourselves and the community around us tend to be more peaceful than usual, more gentle-minded and kind-hearted than usual. So there's really quite a noticeable shift. And for those who are cultivating such qualities in their minds on a daily basis, then that will be how they usually are. Whereas for those of us who don't, we'll maybe be quite different for a week or so, and then we'll revert to how we usually are. And similarly, if we're in the presence of someone with a very powerful, dominant, forceful character, but their character is very harsh and coarse, then we will be influenced by this. And our way of thinking is also going to degenerate. It will start to reflect and be influenced by this powerful, dominant, but negative character in front of us. So the opposite can happen in this way too.
And tao ta dini ge samlo de ko shi ge samlo de yane yalo samdana dini ge dur 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 ya ma ta ko shi ge da tu chen da o khashi chi le ni me dun da chi ni le ko shi ge u ji ji che o ni che o san sam da yong go ya na ta o khashi tho de na din ma shi ji ne na me nam jun na shin chi cha yo ro ba
da ne ta ha mo so
wa ro chi ko ba so shi ra me ba ni chi che o le ni che o le mi chi nian ba na u ji che o de che o san sam ju ni ro ba ta dini je na ye se o de chi 出国家伙嘛家伙是没有利落的那你那一张我在国年或者在年产的在米地中上的等着几年来开始是那个就是就叫我生去旅游来的但他的结果的结果生别的羊的羊的羊的羊的羊的羊的羊的羊的羊的羊的羊的羊的羊的羊的羊的羊的羊的羊的羊的羊的羊的羊的羊的羊的羊的羊的羊的羊的羊的羊的羊的羊的羊的羊的羊的羊的羊的羊的羊的羊的羊的羊的羊的羊的羊的羊的羊的羊的羊的羊的羊的羊的羊的羊的羊的羊的羊的羊的羊的羊的羊的羊的羊的羊的羊的羊的羊的羊的羊的羊的羊的羊的羊的羊的羊的羊的羊的羊的羊的羊的羊的羊的羊的羊的羊的羊的羊的羊的羊的羊的羊的羊的羊的羊的羊的羊的羊的羊的羊的羊的羊的羊的羊的羊的
of someone who's got a very forceful but harsh or coarse personality, we will be influenced by them. And when we are no longer with them, our mind will still be in a more coarse direction, and our behavior and our speech will be in this more coarse direction. And this may last for a week or so, and then dissipate, and we're back to our normal self. Alternatively, if what they say, we reflect on it a lot, then how our mind changes will be influenced by how we reflect on it. So if we reflect on what they had to say, accepting their views, then our mind will stay in a harsh and a coarse manner. Whereas if we're reflecting on what they had to say in terms of and reflecting and applying a peaceful mind and a gentle mind and a wise mind towards what they had to say, then our mind will revert to its more normal way much more quickly. So this is the reason why before engaging in practice, whether it's on emptiness or on love and compassion or any other topic, we invoke the three jewels and our teachers so as to be influenced and inspired by their presence, their blessing, their own qualities in their minds. So after we've made those supplications to our Lama and to the three jewels, we are sitting comfortably on our cushion or on our chair with a straight back. We then turn our mind towards our breath, and we start to concentrate the mind on the breath. And the reason that right at the start of the meditation we turn our mind towards the breath is so as to relax our mind, to contain our mind, to draw our mind in, to limit the distraction. Because we will later be turning towards the object of meditation, and to be successful with that object of meditation, our mind needs to be as undistracted as possible. So in general, we know when we sit quietly, our mind dances around to our work situation, to our family life, and etc. So it goes around all over the show. For the meditation to be successful, though, we need to bring our mind in. And a technique for doing that is to first start by watching the breath and calming and pacifying the mind in that way. The general, the way that the method is described for sitting comfortably, so Geno was demonstrating it there, so to sit with a straight back, to have the head slightly tilted forward, not back, and the eyes slightly down and looking down in the direction towards the end of one's nose, but not at the end of one's nose, but into the space before one, but downwards like that. So, and then the hands in the meditative posture, and with the straight back. The reason why one is always encouraged to sit with a straight back rather than slouching is because when the back is straight, then the subtle energy within the body can flow freely. Whereas if one is slouching, then this hinders the flow of the subtle energy within the body.
This
posture for meditation is named after a particular Buddha called Vajrayana, and so whatever type of meditation one is going to engage in, whether it's on love and compassion or emptiness or calm abiding, one is always encouraged to take sit in the sevenfold Vajrayana position or posture. And one of the steps is to have the hands in this position with the left underneath and the right on top, and the thumbs touching lightly. Then we place this in our lap just below the navel. And so if one can sit in a way that it's advised, this is good. If it's difficult for one, then this really isn't a problem. What's important is that we're trying to develop the mind. So if one can have the aid of the body in this position, then this is great. But if one's not on the floor but on a chair, this is fine. What's important is that how one is sitting is comfortable. And if one can sit with a straight back, then this is great. But if the back is not so cooperative, then that's okay. We don't want the body to distract us. We don't want to be sitting here thinking about the pain in our body. Rather, we want to be thinking about the meditation object.
Mm-hmm. 거기 검제 걸 딘딘이 딘지 되고 그래서 이제 민 넘지 될라 이거야 세워 말고 맞아 자주 되는 이 세워 말고
the seating arrangement that we have here in front with a large mat and then the smaller one, smaller cushion on top. So this is called the seating of concentration. And it's used when people are engaging in meditation. Generally, we don't sit like this. So again, this is now talking from the Tibetan perspective. We would just sit on a cushion. We wouldn't on a mat, we wouldn't have a cushion. This is really done for when one engages in meditation.
Now,
Now, to talk a little bit about this meditation on watching the breath. So this involves the mind observing the exhalation and then the inhalation and trying to gently keep the mind just there, and when it goes away, to try and bring it back to that object. So it's just observing the exhalation, then there's a pause and an inhalation. So it's just that observing and gently returning the mind
when it wanders away.
There are other meditations involving the breath, and they are not called meditation of cultivating the breath. So here, what we're trying to do is just to observe the breath single pointedly. So we're just observing. There's no thinking involved. It's just an observing of the breath, of the exhalation, and there's a pause, an inhalation, etc. It's just an observing, and that is what is meant by this particular meditation of watching the breath.
Jangadi,
Now we're observing the breath going in and going out, whilst we're doing this, there are two mental factors that we are using, two minds that we are using. So one is called mindfulness and one is called introspection. So with mindfulness, we're trying to hold single pointedly observation of the breath. And the introspection is the mind that is seeing that we are doing that or not. So we have these two mental factors of introspection and mindfulness, which are helping us to keep the hold of this observation single-pointedly. Then the next stage in the meditation is to engage in counting. And so here we have an exhalation followed by an inhalation, and that counts as one, and then another exhalation and then inhalation, and that will count as two. And the idea is to be able to progress up to 21 of these, so to try and be able to hold the object of the breath for a count of 21 inhalations and exhalations. This counting, one should try and do it in an unmistaken manner. So what it means to do it in an unmistaken manner is to be aware that the exhalation and then the inhalation counts as one. Otherwise one reaches the number of 21 somewhat more quickly. And here, there's some people choose to, as opposed to counting all the way up to 21, they'll rather count in three groups of seven. So they'll observe the breath for a count of seven, and then another seven, and another seven. And that's the general way that it's advised to get to 21, because it's felt that it's maybe easier just to remember a smaller number. Others, though, they may choose to count from 1 up to 21, and that's fine too, as one chooses. But the key thing here is, whilst observing the breath with these minds of mindfulness and introspection, to count an inhalation and an exhalation and an inhalation as one. As we observe our breath, we'll notice that sometimes our breathing is much more rapid, at other times it's really quite slow. If it's sometimes more rapid, sometimes slower, then this is okay, it's how it is at that moment. But generally, the idea is for the breath to be left in its natural state, and us to observe it in at its natural speed. So certainly not to try to speed it up or slow it down, but just to observe it how it is. And then Geno demonstrated, one's just sitting quietly, and breathing in our usual way, in our normal way. But if at that time one's breathing is agitated or quite slow, then that's okay. It will come back to its normal place. And then this method is also utilized for those who are cultivating calm abiding. So it helps us improve our concentration. The goal here is so that whilst we are observing the breath, we are only observing the breath, and that our mind isn't getting distracted to other objects outside, such as work and family and the goings on of our life, but that we can keep our mind calm and focused.
zangzu dam dam sem sem buzdo wo ki wo me ba da de ne sem buzdo wo ki wo ma dan ni chik ni su chan da ni mi ni su da ma ri ba da de ne ge den che sem ki wo me ba da de ne yong ro da de ne ka ble u chung mun di ma ju ge de ne ge gom thu ba na den do yong ge.
And sometimes when we're having difficulties, these difficulties in our lives really dominate us. We may be upset about something that has happened or not happened, or what someone has said and the like. And this goes around again and again and again in our minds. And our mind is really agitated and disturbed and unhappy at that time. So if at that time we can sit quietly somewhere and try and observe our breath, and each time our mind goes back to this object of agitation, gently bring it back to our breath. This really will have some great benefit in calming us down and reducing the agitation. When our mind now is calm and focused, then we're now ready to engage in meditation on emptiness. And how to think about emptiness. So here we can look at the first line in the text, and the first line in the second point. Consider all phenomena as like a dream.
We
all have the experience of dreaming that sometimes, especially if we have a nightmare, that we generate great fear, and we're quite terrified in our nightmares. Well, alternatively, sometimes we have really lovely dreams, and we're very pleased, very happy. It's a very quite the opposite feeling arises. And yet when we wake up, we are aware that what that fearful object, or what we were so pleased about or happy about in our dreams, that this was all a dream. It was just an appearance to the mind. It didn't exist substantially. It was just an appearance to the mind. So all this beauty and these objects of fear that we saw, they don't exist from their own side. There's nothing about them that is real. Rather, it's just an appearance to our mind. So this is something that we all know. Then in our waking state, then we encounter things that we really like, either that we see or we hear or we taste, or we hear something that we don't like, or we see something we don't like and we get agitated by it. So here, if we investigate what's going on, both the object or the mind, we will see that there is no inherent nature to that object, or to either the external object or the internal object of the mind. We will see that how it appears to us, which is as something really fantastic and amazing, and therefore we want it, so in other words, from its own side it's wonderful, or something that we find repulsive and repels us. That too, if we investigate, we cannot find any inherent quality that the object exists. and therefore the object cannot exist inherently. So in this way, we can see that everything that appears to us doesn't exist in the way that it appears. And this is just like in what appears to us in a dream. Because in a dream, everything that appears to us is just a mere appearance to the mind. And likewise, in our waking state, what appears to us appears in a certain way, but it doesn't exist in that way. So it too is just a mere appearance to the mind. Then the text refers to the container and the contained, which means the container being the world and the contained the beings within that world. So here, amongst the container and the contained, whatever appears to our mind, the way that it appears is mistaken. So whatever we perceive, whether it's phenomena such as things or phenomena such as people, the way that it appears to our mind is mistaken. So if we then liken this the statement to the dream analogy, whoever we meet in the dream, we wouldn't say, well, last night I really met that person. All that happened is there was an appearance in our mind. And we had this appearance of meeting someone, but it's clear we didn't meet them. Likewise, what we encounter in our waking state, the way that they appear to us is just a mere appearance because of this mistaken mind. So it's not saying that these we didn't meet in the waking state, that if something happened, say we stabbed or whatever, it's not saying we weren't stabbed, but the way this appears to us, that is mistaken, and the way it appears is actually is not dissimilar from a dream. Let's take an object such as the person, or the self. So how does the person appear to us? So this is the first thing we need to investigate when investigating the self, is to come to see how the person appears to us. And then the second step would be to investigate whether the way that it appears is in accordance with reality or not. So that would be the second step. So how does the person appear to us? How does the person appear to us? So when we look at how we appear to ourselves, we see that the person appears as not being dependent on causes and conditions, or not being dependent on parts, as being independent. So another way to put it, the person appears to not be dependent on the mind, and it appears to exist from its own side, that there's something from its own side that that is a person, that is not a dependent arising, that it is not dependent on causes. And then we need to investigate this, and we need to do this repeatedly until we come to realize clearly that the way that it appears is not how it exists. So whatever object appears to us, the way that it appears, which is to be a truly existent or inherently existent, or existing from its own side, it doesn't exist in that way. The way that it actually exists is independence, as a dependence arising, and independence on mere imputation from the mind. So this is something we've looked at recently in Tenets and before in the Heart Sutra. So an object doesn't exist in the way that it appears. Rather, there is an imputation. There is an imputation from the side of the mind. To take as an illustration, if we see a black dog, and we will think, oh, that is a black dog. We'll have no doubt that is a black dog, because this is what appears to us, a black dog. And if someone were to say it's not a black dog, we'd be very surprised, because it appears very solidly and concrete as a black dog. But this is actually only because its fur is black. So there's a black color dependence on the fur. So if we investigate, we'll see actually it is not a black dog. And the way that it appears and the way that it exists in reality are not in accordance. However, our mind is mistaken with this, because we have this appearance of a black dog, and as existing from its own side. There's something about this black dog that makes it a black dog, and then we grasp at that appearance as being real, as being true. And that mind that grasps like this at this appearance as being correct, this is a mistaken mind, this is a wrong mind. Rather, this black dog exists in dependence on our mind imputing black dog upon it. So this black dog, then, we come to see that it doesn't exist truly in the way that it appears to us. Rather, there is this imputation of black dog from the side of the mind. So this imputation from the side of the mind shows that this appearance of true existence is mistaken, because there is imputation, it is dependent on imputation. Therefore, it is a dependence arising and not truly existent. Therefore, the way it appears and the way it exists are not in accordance. So for example, so we see this black dog, and we call this a black dog, and we have no doubt this is a black dog. But if someone was to shave all the fur of the dog, we would no longer call the same dog a black dog, because this would be kind of naked.
Mm.
However, if this black dog was a truly existent black dog or an inherently existent black dog, then it would always be perceived by everyone in such a way, no matter what. So if one were to shave this black dog, it would still be a black dog. No one would have any doubt, yes, this is still a black dog. But of course it isn't. So therefore it becomes clear that what we call it, that this black dog is only so because we impute black dog upon it by our mind.
Now we've
used the illustration of the black dog, but as we see here in the text, consider all phenomena as like a dream. So of course this relates to all phenomena, and so every phenomenon we need to meditate on its appearance and come to see that the way that it appears is not in accordance with how it exists or how it abides. So we need to come to see that all phenomena, whether they objects like a dog or their minds, etc., whatever the object of meditation, that it doesn't exist in the way that it appears, that it is not truly existent, rather it is dependent upon mere imputation of them by the mind. And when we come to see this, and we see this clearly, we then have an understanding, or we could say a realization, of emptiness. Then when we have this understanding of emptiness, and it's powerful and stable in our mind, then we hold on to that, we rest with that understanding, we abide with that understanding. And here we are engaging in meditation on emptiness. And this final part, where we have come to an understanding of emptiness, or you could say a realization if you want, we have this understanding of emptiness, and we resting with that understanding, then we could say we're meditating in a single-pointed way on emptiness. So this morning we've started with the actual presentation or the actual instructions on cultivating ultimate bodhicitta. We spoke about the need to calm and focus the mind through the meditation of watching the breath. And we spoke in some detail how to do that, and also mentioned that when we noticing in our normal course of our life that our mind is very distracted, either we are a bit upset about something, or we're quite attached to something, we really want to have something, then by focusing our mind at that time on the breath, our mind will calm and relax and be more focused and not be so swayed and also under the influence of this attachment or the anger. And then we spoke about how once that has been done, one comes to contemplate on emptiness. And here we spoke about the first thing that one needs to do, or have done by this point, is to have made supplications and requesting prayers to our Lama and Yidam, so as to give us inspiration and strength through their blessings. And then we spoke about how to meditate on emptiness, and to see that whatever phenomena appears to us, or whatever phenomenon appears to us, we need to investigate whether the way that it appears to us is the way that it exists. And there the first thing is to do is to see, so how does this object appear to us? And when we see how it appears to us, we need to investigate whether it exists in that way. So we we mentioned one analogy today about the dog, and there's another one that we've mentioned in the previous classes, which is well known, and that's about when we misperceive an object and we have a reaction to our misperception. So for example, we see a coiled rope, and we don't see a coiled rope, we're actually perceiving a snake. So we have this fear arising in us because we're seeing a coiled snake before us. But actually, it's not a snake, it's a coiled rope. And when we come to realize that, then immediately this fear, this mind of fear, is eliminated, because the mind of wisdom has now come to see that that is not an object of fear, and therefore the afflictive mind is eliminated. And likewise with the illustration of a dog, when we investigate all phenomena in that way, that there is nothing inherent about what appears to us, rather we are merely imputing a name or quality onto an object. And when we come to see then that things do not exist in the way that they appear, then our afflictions start to be reduced, because our anger for a particular object, or our attachment for a particular object, when we come to understand that it doesn't exist in the way that we are perceiving it as being truly wonderful or absolutely awful, when we see that, of course these afflictive minds will naturally reduce. And as these afflictive minds reduce, then we are going to accrue far less negative karma and the like. And this means that our future rebirths are more likely to go well, and we are more likely to have less difficulties in our future rebirths. This afternoon then we'll continue with the presentation from the second line, and we'll talk then about how this appearance, how this relates to our experience in samsara. Someone wants to ask a question?
Rather than the other way, is there some reason?
Why the exhalation and...
You know, you can exhalation, inhalation.
Rather than inhalation, exhalation. Not so, okay, Uchum Nup Dunke Kyabdu, Dining Natsu Dampo, okay, Par Denitsur Kyabdiare. Dini Karitini Dampo Par Denitsur, Dini Dichi, Dini Tsur Dan Par Marebe, Utsur Dan Par Marebe. It's not important if you choose to count the other way, that's fine. The
the Tibetan term is first exhalation and then inhalation. And so possibly originally someone, when they started, they started from first I exhale, then I inhale. But if you're more comfortable doing it the other way, that's fine. So is there a risk, if we see things as a dream, is there a risk that we could become a little nihilistic? Yes, that's a good question. So here what we're saying is that the way that something appears to us, it doesn't exist in that way, and therefore it is likened to a dream. Because in a dream, the way things appear to us, they clearly do not exist in that way. However, what it's not saying is that things don't exist. So we spoke about the black dog. And so the black dog doesn't appears to us as if there is something about it as a black dog that makes it exist from its own side. And that appearance is what doesn't exist. It's not saying there isn't a dog. So that there is a dog, everything we see, everything we use, then these things aren't there. So what is being refuted is not that there is no dog or there's no table, but rather the way that it appears to us, that doesn't exist. In other words, the way we relate to it, this is mistaken. So for example, if we see someone else experiencing difficulties, so they for sure are experiencing difficulties, but what is being refuted here is the way those difficulties are being perceived or appearing to us and therefore being perceived by us, that is mistaken. It's not saying that that other person isn't suffering or experiencing difficulties. For sure they are. But this appearance, this is what is the mistake. Yeah?
I'll just ask a question about the meditation on emptiness. And just to give a bit of background, I suspect I've probably been doing it wrong. My draw on emptiness was that I'm just looking at a bright blue sky or an open chasm, there's just nothing there. Hence it's empty. Just from what I've heard today, would we perhaps say, for argument's sake, I looked at you and thought, oh, gee, he's a crazy looking guy. Would the meditation on emptiness be to actually explore that and think, well, maybe he's not, maybe he's something else, maybe he's just wanting faceless design?
Yeah, yeah, no, I understand. So up to this point, the way you've been thinking about emptiness is thinking, for example, about a clear blue sky, and that is empty. Whereas from what I've heard today, if I was to look at you and I see you in a certain way as cranky or whatever, then from my understanding here, I should be looking at that appearance to see if, well, actually maybe he looks in this way, but there are other reasons for it or something like that. Yeah? Okay. Then,
Namka Tumpe De. Then Tumpe Niki Kola Danda Padu Samdu, then Namka De Kola Sangiya, because in there Tumpe De. In a Denin Kerengi Sungsu Sune, then it's a notal Sosung is Sankidu. Then in Samsu Hagoya Sapa Kiasong, in the Taka Debe, Penanari Kegua Padu, then Kung Namgu Duxatungiare. Then Samsul de Nangdu, then in a Netang de Nyamsik Taksu Jagere. No Chicken Kung Dompa Nakbotungi Mare, Chicken de Kungi Dompa Namgunere. Then in a Hakoye Sape di Taktakreve.
Did you add that? Nansul Nangu and do Tony Lejevach, the Kerche was Nansul. Well, Nadi, Lodi Ganeshi, Ganeshi Langu, Sibidi, now what thing was on board. The Ganang was not Nadu, Nanzu, Lupa, Matiava, Java, my Horong, when a young man, she ever drew a chip now, Javana, Dennis drew him in the Java, Dennis, your mother, Lupa, or did to a Lupa Shango, which is that Dennis Mindu Sambana, got Tony sometime. The Namga Tongwanaka, which Mindu Samdena, did Tony Shago.
She said, So, yes, what you said is correct. So, up to now, thinking about the emptiness of the sky, then this will not lead to the understanding of emptiness. So, your understanding from what you've heard today, it seems to be correct. So, you look at what appears to your mind, and you, so, for example, my expression, and you see how that appears to your mind. And when we, that's the first step, we see how it appears. And the way that it appears is that it appears to be independent of causes, independent of parts. There's something existent about it from its own side. And then when we have an understanding of how it appears, we then investigate if that appearance is in accordance with reality or not. And then you're giving examples of how it maybe isn't. And because if that appearance is in accordance with reality, everyone would see it in that way, and it would always be seen that way. And not dependent on causes, it wouldn't change. So your understanding was correct there. Yeah, so it's really seeing that how it appears, it doesn't exist, but it does depend on, and part of what it depends on is this imputation from mind. This imputation from mind. So in your example, you'd see something in a particular way, you'd impute something in a particular way. Someone else would impute something different on the same object. Thank you. Okay, thank you.
I'm going to go to the